Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that golden oldie, Kyle JCRB Krause.
I smell a little musty, like an old antique, but not a very good antique that's not worth a lot of money, just a really crappy one that sits in the corner of the antique shop that nobody cares about.
It's the kind that's set next to the lamp, so you can't tell if it's just decoration or if it's for sale as well.
Right, exactly. And it's like, it's old, but it's not like desirable old. It's just old. It doesn't, it's like nobody cares.
The guy who runs the shop bought it because he knows the person. They decided, okay, I'll give you a little bit of money for this.
Exactly. Speaking of someone who grew up in antique shops, I can confirm that these things did very much happen.
Oh, yes. I have been taken on more than one shopping trip, and there's some neat vintage stuff in there, but I wouldn't want to spend money on it, because...
Right.
Now that I have room for any new stuff anyway.
Right. Well, as a kid growing up in antique shops, there weren't a lot of video games. Now there's a lot more video games in antique shops. I mean, sure, they're crappy video games. Usually, but they're video games nonetheless.
You never know when someone's going to put that mint copy of Super Mario Brothers that they don't know what it is.
Yep, the sticker-sealed copy from the pre-release New York run of the original NES before it went worldwide. You never know when you might find one of those and be able to sell it on eBay for over $100,000.
Sitting there on the desk for like $5 and you're trying not to wet yourself. Play it cool. It's like, I think I've heard of this one. I'm kind of a fan of old, so yeah, why not?
Yep, sure. Yep.
Oh, God. Get to the car. Start the car. Go.
The only problem is that copy that was in the news recently was graded, so they knew what they had.
Well, yeah.
Sucks. Dang it.
How have you been, sir? What's going on?
Oh, I wish I could announce some cool things, but not really. I guess other than me being relatively active over on twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming, I've been trying to stream over there a couple times a week at least, so head on over there and check it out. Most recently, I played 2000XX, which is a very, very cool Mega Man X-esque roguelite. That's a lot of fun. So, but you have to complete the game in one run, or you have to start over if you die. So
yeah, I think it's exciting to announce that we're partners with Twitch now.
Yeah, we are Twitch affiliate, not partners yet, but we're affiliate.
Oh, okay.
We're affiliate. Partners are slightly different. Partners get more stuff, but we are affiliated. So if you're interested, head on over there, twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming, and you can do all sorts of stuff during the streams.
You can subscribe to us. You can throw bits at us.
Yep. Bits. I like bits.
Tasty bits.
Indeed.
Perhaps we'll even go so far as to get the little custom bits. I have little Bumble Kings fall down from the sky. To be extra distracting.
Indeed. And you can also, you might be able to become a VIP. We'll have to see. And what's been going on with you, Ian?
Nothing that I can talk about publicly, but there's been a lot of Sonic work on my end. The number 13 just came out. 14, I think, comes out later this week, as of this recording. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Folks are already kind of freaking out with what Dr. Eggman did in Sonic number 13. And it's like, the roller coaster's just barely cresting the hill. You don't know what you're in for. So I'm knee deep in that storyline while you guys are just getting started. And oh, there's fun deviltry to be had.
And then, of course, there's the Tangle and Whisper mini series coming up. When is that coming out? Do you know?
I believe in the summer. I don't know if we have a official release date announced, but it's this year.
Okay, good. Apparently. Cool.
It'll be after the 2019 annual, which is out this month, next month. Shoot, I don't remember.
Yeah, how many issues of that mini are there? Do you know offhand?
We haven't said officially yet, so I'm going to stay mum on it just yet.
Okay,
I don't think it's a big deal, but you know, you don't want to get ahead of the press release stuff.
Right. Okay, so we can probably assume about an average length run, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're not going to be breaking the mold here. It's
okay.
It's just a nice, self-contained bit of Tangle and Whisper goodness.
I'm ready. my body is ready. I don't know about my mind. My mind might be blown, but my body is ready.
We also have a new thing coming to the Bumblecast. Small thing, but starting next month, if you are a patron over at patreon.com/Bumblecast, we are going to let you sit in as we record each new Bumblecast.
Yep, we are going to be live streaming on the Discord, our recording sessions of the show. Now, you will have to keep in mind that you'll get the warts and all. You get to hear us say all the naughty words. You get to hear all our flubs, all our mistakes, all the things we cut out of the final show. And so be aware that might not be quite as polished as the final version, but you'll get to hear it.
Also, keep in mind, we don't have a set schedule when we record these episodes. It's kind of as our own schedules allow. But we'll try to give you a shout-out at least an hour beforehand over at Twitter. That's at Bumblecast. So keep an eye on that, and we'll let you know when we're going to record. Hop on in. We won't be like taking any chat or questions or stuff, at least not yet. This is more of just a small, fun, behind-the-curtain perk for the patrons. And that's at any tier. If you're a $1, you're in. If you're at $10, you're in. Doesn't matter. You're a patron. You're in the door.
Yep. And we'll also notify you in the Discord, too. So hang out in the Discord if you're interested, because it's all going to go down there. We're all going to be in the Discord. It's going to be a ton of fun.
But otherwise, the episodes will be airing every other Monday, as usual, for general consumption.
Right, right. Yes, indeed.
Speaking of patron-y stuff, if you're a patron, you also get automatically entered into the Bumble Raffle, which we're going to pull right now.
All right, let's do it.
And if you're not a patron, email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You get the same chance as everybody else. Only difference is patrons are automatically entered into every single drawing. This episode's winner is...
Lisa M.
Congratulations, Lisa. We'll get in touch with you and let you know what you won.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, Lisa. All right, we ready to move on?
We are, but ironically, in a way, we are not.
I guess that's true. Because today's topic is
nostalgia.
Is it as good as we remember it?
Of course not.
No, okay, good.
It never is.
I'm glad we're both on the same page about this, you know? We're taking kind of a critical, but still, we're trying to be fun about nostalgia here. Because we do talk a lot about, like, nostalgic things and nerdy things on this show. Things that maybe you look back on and you're like, man, I really loved that thing. And then you realize, oh, that thing wasn't nearly as good as I remember it being. Or maybe it is as good as you remember it being.
Well, I remember when you brought up the topic initially and you're going, you know, VHS stores.
Right.
Rentals, and I'm like, now hold on a minute.
Rental stores, yeah.
I remember distinctly this old VHS store when I was a kid that, you know, had this one room off the side that was nothing but the kids' movies, you know, your Disney stuff and your Transformers and all that. And it was this, like, perfect little round Hobbit-like room. And you walked in and there were all these shelves that went as high as the ceiling. And when you're, you know, five, that's huge. And
right.
All lined up, like, pictures in the room. And it's like, oh, that's delightful. What are you talking about? That's wonderful. And then, you know, you pointed out stuff like... You had to rewind.
Yeah. Or you had to go to the store. Like, who has time for that now?
You had to go outside.
You had to go out to watch a movie. You couldn't just, like, stay in and choose one at home. Now, here's the problem. You get kind of this polarization feeling of just being overwhelmed by choice. Yeah. Nowadays. But at the same time, you could still get that in a video store, too, of being like, wow, there's so many movies and so many games. How could I choose just one? And then if you chose one, you got stuck with it for the whole weekend. It's not like now where you can just stop playing it and move on to something else. So on the one hand, it's kind of nice because you choose your one thing. You've got it for the weekend. That's it. That's what you get. But
yeah.
if it's crap, if you don't like it, if it's just something you don't want to play or watch, sucks to be you. You got to wait until next weekend to get something else.
I'm sure you had this, the VHS tape that was, you know, generic store brand, that you sent to the slowest recording speed so that you could put multiple Christmas specials on it, one after the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have 6-hour length Mystery Science Theater 3000 tapes.
There you go.
That look like garbage and have really crappy commercials.
And you're sitting there with a remote with your finger on the trigger like you're some kind of gunslinger.
Yep.
Stopping the tape as the commercials start and starting recording again right as the commercials end. But there's like no way to tell when that's the last commercial is. And why didn't the remote register? Oh, God, run over to the VCR. Hit the button. I just lost 5 minutes.
Yeah, or just if you've just recorded the episode, because you could set it on a timer and record stuff. I was recording Mystery Science Theater 3000 after it was finished, so it was on at like 6 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't awake at 6 o'clock in the morning. What are you, crazy? I'm not awake at 6 o'clock in the morning, but I'd record it so I could watch it for later. And then you end up like, a commercial comes on and you're like, ah, crap, gotta fast forward again. So you fast forward, and then it goes through all the commercials, and then it starts getting to the episode. You're like, oh, crap, 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 crap. So you start hitting play, and then you got to hit rewind and go back a little bit, and then you have to watch the last commercial because you went back too far, and it's frustrating.
It
sucks.
I remember I had, it was either theater rehearsal or it was sports practice or something, but darn it, I did not want to miss Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So I hounded my mom to record each and every episode.
Uh-oh.
But it was on a tape where she recorded some of her own stuff, so she didn't want to tape over her own stuff, so you had to record over just the slot where Power Rangers was. But you couldn't tell where the timestamp was because what was zero on the VCR was just where it started counting on the tape. It wasn't the actual beginning of the tape. So you had to watch the episode in reverse to know when it was finished, or rather starting, so that you could record over it. And she didn't mind that too much because watching Power Rangers in reverse is hilarious because they all just spring backwards up into the air. It's almost like a Monty Python skit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, you know what? That nostalgia is great.
That is.
I don't care who you are.
That's fun nostalgia. That's fun right there. I don't care who you are. It's a good time. A little later on in life, though, do you remember like pagers, having a pager? I don't think I ever had a pager, but I remember my parents having one.
I know I wanted one super bad because that was the new tech, but looking back, why?
They're so bad. They're so stupid. They're just...
We had answering machines at that point. You're going to check your answering machine. So if your pager says you need to go check your answering machine, all it's doing is prompting you to go do what you're already doing. And if you're not doing it already, it's because you're busy with something. So...
Yeah, they were they were common in like hospitals for doctors and stuff. That's like the only use I can think of where they actually make sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other than that, it's like, what? Why?
I think my dad may have had one, or I'm making that up. I actually don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were just cool. They were just the new thing that they saw other people using, people who had maybe a little bit more money, and you're like, oh, that's cool, I want one too. And then they finally got cheap enough. But at the same time, they were not great, because you still had to, like, use a phone. Like, you still had to have money. Still had to have money for a pay phone and whatever. It's like, oh, yeah.
Pay phones.
Pay phones, yeah, those are extremely rare these days. Apparently, they still exist in a few places, but they're not common.
And not only do they still exist, now they take credit cards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a few around here that I can kind of reliably find, mostly at the airport, but there's one or two in our area. But yeah, that's like any kind of parking meter or any kind of card scanner. You just slip it in and out and charge a card. I think it still takes change. I'm not sure. Who carries cash anymore?
They finally got onto the 20th century. Ironic, because it was something that was invented in the 20th century. Oh, telephones, telephones, telephones. Did you ever have a crappy cell phone?
I did. I had like a dinky little flip top that I think could text. I'm not sure.
Let's see. I'm thinking back to like 2003 here. My first phone was a really crappy Kyocera Sprint phone. with a screen that was a monochrome LCD that had a blue backlight.
Oof.
And it was bad. It was rough. It looked like a backlit Game Boy. but it had an even lower resolution and was just as blurry. So if you tried to play Tetris on it, which is one of the few games it came with, and of course you couldn't add any more because this is back in the day when internet connected phones were a novelty. So I remember using that to talk to people on AOL Instant Messenger. That was like the most advanced thing it could do.
Oh, wow.
And that was pretty amazing because this was like 2003, 2004.
Did it have an actual keypad though, or did you have hammer 7777 for a letter?
Yeah, yeah.
5 5 2.
No,
two, two,
no.
Three,
it only had three, a it only had a numpad with the classic texting. I got pretty decent at doing that though, but yeah, it was a real pain. I do not miss that sort of keypad and that sort of texting. That doesn't make me happy. That's not the sort of happy nostalgia. That's the nostalgia that I look back on and I'm like, man, I'm glad we're done with that era.
Now, you want to talk old tech? I remember one of my dad's early computers, and him writing up screenplays on WordPerfect 5, I think.
Yep.
Not Word. WordPerfect, which was trying to compete and ultimately died.
Yep.
But this was a blue background.
Yep.
With the white block text. And the only way you could tell if something was formatted was the color that the text changed to. I think pink meant it was bolded, yellow was italicized, I forget what each one was. But you didn't actually see the formatting on the screen. You just had to memorize what the colors were. And then when it printed out, hope to God that you had it right.
And you could use it without a mouse. Imagine that.
Did we have a mouse?
Using something without a mouse. Man, I had an old like Tandy computer. This computer was like from the 80s, but we were using it in the early 90s, so we were a little bit behind. But it only had like it was an IBM compatible PC compatible sort of DOS-esque machine, but it wasn't quite proper DOS. So certain DOS applications ran okay, but other ones were complete garbage and just didn't work. But we did have WordPerfect, and I do remember playing around with it, because I mean, when you're a kid, you pretty much put in any computer disk and just play around with whatever's on that computer disk for a few hours. I wasn't too picky.
If you want to go all the way back, I'm pretty sure my dad had an Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some roguelike game that he had to boot it up with me facing the other way because it was some kind of like horrible skull octopus on the loading screen that freaked me out. But I really wanted to play the game because it was a video game, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you played as a zero.
A zero?
He shot minus signs at letters.
Wow.
If you shot in an I, that was an Iceman. And a B was a bat. You knew what the monsters were because it was the first letter in their name. And you travel down corridors made out of brackets and equal signs.
Wow. So this is.
If there was a way to manage an inventory, I don't know. But you were. I just distinctly remember you were a little yellow zero wandering around with your arrow keys and. Shoot, maybe space bar was attacked? I don't remember.
That's even less advanced than some of the games I remember playing. I remember a game that was a little bit like Super Sprint, you know, the top down racing game that's just like a single screen. Like super off-road style but not quite. It was more directly top down, but this was like it was just called Race with an exclamation point.
Straight to the point. I like it.
Yep. And it was literally just a top down racing game where you just go around like a small single screen track. And but I remember it because the graphics were what is it, EGA or CGA? I can't remember which one it was, but whichever one, I think CGA is the one where it's like magenta, cyan, yellow, and black. That's like the only colors. So I distinctly remember everything being cyan, magenta, and black. The car was like pink, and the track was black, and the walls were blue, and it just looks awful. It looks terrible. I look back on it now and I'm like, man, that was a really crappy game. But back then I loved it because, hey, it's a computer racing game. I'm playing on the computer and I'm playing a racing game. This is the best thing ever. And I played it for forever. And I look back on it now and I'm like, what was, wow, I was easily entertained.
I remember when we upgraded our internet from 14.4K to 28.8.
Oh, yeah, I remember that too.
We did the incremental. We eventually went to 56K, but that 28.8, that made a big difference.
That was double the speed for your AOL.
I mean, once we hit 56, I was like, holy mackerel, they can't go beyond this. Who needs anything faster?
Holy cow, I can download a 10 megabyte game demo in a couple hours. This is amazing.
I remember telling my youngest brother about the days of old. He knows about dial-up. He knows it existed.
Yeah.
Ways that, you know, we know that the pioneers took the Oregon Trail or that dinosaurs existed.
Sure.
But, I'm saying, it was at 14.4K a minute. And you could see the realization dawn in his eyes. And he kind of recoiled as if something smelly had entered the room.
I remember spending days and days and days at download.com downloading game demos, and they would take forever. And then my mom would get mad because I'd hog all the internet, and she'd be like, I want to get on the internet. And I'm like, no, it's my internet. And then eventually I ended up with my own freaking phone line that I only used to get on the internet. Never took phone calls with it because screw that noise. It was the internet or bust.
Yeah, I may have gotten in trouble because I hooked up the Dreamcast to download a save file for SA2 to get all 120 emblems because I really wanted to play Green Hill Zone, and may have tied up the phone line for a little over a half hour.
Oh, wow.
That Dad needed for business.
Oh, no. That's funny. I don't remember if I didn't have dial-up by the time I ended up with a Dreamcast. We'd finally gotten broadband when it was at... You had 10 megabit per second upload and up, or 10 megabit per second download with a 1 megabit per second upload back in the day when it was brand new. And it was so freaking, it's like, oh, it was so much faster than modems. But now you look back on it, it's like, oh, man, that's super ancient. Still.
How did we have the patience for that?
I don't know. Like when you download a real player video, because this was before YouTube.
Oh, shoot.
And they'd be the video would be the size of a postage stamp, and you'd go to make it full screen and it would just be a big mess of blobby pixels that looked like garbage. Back in the day, huh?
Memories.
All this crappy stuff we put up with because we didn't have anything else to do and we didn't have anything better.
Shoot, did you remember television before cable?
Yes, because here's the thing. I didn't have any sort of cable or satellite internet until about 2002.
Ooh.
So I had, or no, actually it was closer to 2000 now that I think about it. It was when we finally moved out of our house in the middle of nowhere in the boonies and finally moved into town that we got any sort of, actually it was satellite at first and then it became cable, but... Yeah, I grew up watching nothing but over-the-air TV. I never had any sort of cable at all. So everybody who talks about shows that they loved on Nickelodeon and like early Cartoon Network stuff, I just completely missed out. I never saw any of that stuff. Like I saw Power Rangers and I saw the Fox Kids and the Kids WB stuff, but that was it.
No, it's still decent television.
Yeah, I still remember for the time.
Or what was it, Zenith Magnavox, I think?
No. Zenith and Magnavox are two different companies.
Okay, maybe, I guess we had one of each at some point.
Okay.
I just remember the one TV we had actually had a number pad on the side so you could manually input.
Oh,
no, cool. No, not on the screen. It was like a phone pad. they put in the channel
on the side of the screen. That's what I meant. Like it was it was on the TV itself, though.
And my folks were like, "It used to be you had to dial it like a radio." And I'm like, "What's a radio? What's a dial?"
Wow, you didn't. When was that? You didn't? Because I distinctly remember having a dial screen TV. I had a black and white TV growing up for a little while as like a secondary portable TV. I distinctly remember going with my mom to work sometimes during like the summer, and we'd bring that TV and my Nintendo with us, and I play like old Nintendo games in black and white, just in a spare room off to the side, a spare office. It's like I'm sitting there playing Yoshi in black and white while the sound of heavy machinery is going off around me in the office, or as I'm in the office off to the side. And it's like, well, this is cool, I think. I'm not sure. It's a little weird. But yeah, it was an old crappy black and white TV that we had. I'm pretty sure it got handed down to us or something. But we had some... we had a really interesting mix of like new and old technology growing up.
Look at you inventing portable gaming all by your own.
I guess the Game Boy already existed, but whatever. I never had one. Not until a little later. Oh, man.
And see, here we are reminiscing about all these terrible, clunky, inconvenient.
Oh, yeah.
Make do with you want, and it's like, ah, I remember those days fondly. Why? Why? If given the option, we would not go back to any of this.
Right.
I'm quite content with what we have now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I quite like where we've come. I'm pretty happy with our modern technology for the most part. I really think like people who are like, oh, the kids these days, they'll never get to experience what it's like to go to a video store. Good! Going to a video store sucked!
I mean, I will say that going to Blockbuster to grab the video game for the weekend and all the good stuff is already gone, but mom's going to be mad if you don't come back with something because we made the trip to Blockbuster. So what looks mildly interesting... That exposed me to a few titles that I wouldn't normally have picked up.
Right, right. There is that factor. There are definitely some games that I would not have played if it weren't for the fact that they were the only ones left at the video store when we went.
Sometimes
for good or bad.
Yeah, and nowadays, you know, we've got so much to choose from. It's this constant shouting match mosh pit to even get noticed.
Right.
For half a second. So, not saying that, you know, we need stores to find the next Dream Daddy or Hollow Knight, but, you know, it had some... I'm trying really, really hard to justify it. Sorry.
There is some merit to it. It is a bit of an uphill battle these days because there's just so much more media to consume than there used to be. And it's so much more accessible than it used to be. And it does make it more difficult for certain things to get noticed that really should. But I don't know if I want to go back to where it was a lot less convenient. I don't know.
Now, I am interested where there's rumblings that various companies are looking at purely streaming options for video game, and that the console will become less of what you need to run the software as more of a gateway to their individual servers that will handle all the processing power. It just beams it straight to you.
Yeah, it's more of a client or a terminal rather than...
Right.
Yeah.
And there's the logistics of the, you know, download speed and upload speed, because what we have right now wouldn't be able to play reliably what we do now. But it's just interesting to think of a time where we're approaching where downloading a title might be passé in a few years.
Yeah.
You know, you just stream it, and Kyle, I'm getting old. I don't know if I...
Well, the problem with that is that it's really difficult to, like, once those games are... If we start releasing games exclusively streaming, then once the company arbitrarily decides it's time to shut down the servers that run the game's gone forever. You'll never get to play it ever again.
Of course, we're already running into that nowadays.
And we are running into a lot of that now, where games are just up and disappearing. And whether whether those games, some of those games are worth saving or not is kind of irrelevant. It's just the fact that so many companies are just so willing to just pull the plug on not just games, but anything that just gets eradicated from history, basically.
I've got a wild idea. What if we take that game data, put it on a physical media so that it can't just be lost if a server is cut down? But obviously, there's a finite number of resources, so we'll only make a certain number of copies. We loan these out to individuals briefly, because everyone needs to experience. They can rent it for a brief time, but they need some one localized place. So what if we started, I don't know what to call it, we'll just say a rental store off the top of my head.
Sure.
So we'll create this quote-unquote rental store and have people come in. It's almost like a library, but for video games. Wild concept, I know.
It's very weird, especially since libraries nowadays have video games, but we'll ignore that.
And then we can go back to the fun times where you can finally find that copy of Godzilla for the GameCube that you and your brother have wanted for months, and you pop open the case and somebody took a screwdriver to the back of the disc.
Oh.
There's not a single solitary solid surface left. It looks like it was in an explosion. Oh, I will find you, whoever did that, and I will make you pay.
Why would they put that back on the shelf? Didn't the person, don't people like open up the case and make sure the game is even still there?
I'm sure they were supposed to, but guess what? They did not.
Somebody got lazy. No wonder video stores don't exist anymore.
Bring me the streaming service. I take it all back.
Are you talking about Godzilla Destroy All Monsters Melee? Because that's a great game right there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. We're if we
just a giant kaiju running around.
If we want to talk about good nostalgia, that game right there, that's a good game.
It wasn't balanced at all, but
fun. No, but who cares? And that wasn't the point. The point was you could stomp around as a giant monster and beat each other up in glorious 3D.
It felt right. It felt like you were a dude in a suit tromping around at
exactly.
a slowed down frame rate.
Exactly. So that's good nostalgia right there. If you haven't played if you haven't played that game out there, you should play it. It's good. It's real good.
And the subsequent games, they try to make it better, and somehow that just made it worse. It wasn't as fun.
Yeah, I agree.
It didn't need to be balanced. It just needed to have buildings.
It just needed to have
knockdown
craziness and silliness. It's a Godzilla game. It's just got to be silly. It's fine. You don't have to be serious. Oh, man. Jeez. Nostalgia is a weird thing. It's so hard to, like, even now, like, there are certain video game systems that I'm thinking of that were, like, really cool at the time, but now they're just kind of garbagey. They're just not great. Like, any handheld system pre-Game Boy Color.
Now, the original Game Boy, brick that it was.
The original Game
Boy. Devourer of batteries.
Yeah, well.
That thing is a hardy piece of hardware.
I'm not saying it's, like, easily breakable or anything. It's just, I kind of go back to it, and I, like, try and play it, and it's all so blurry, and it's so difficult to see the screen, and it's not a great experience anymore compared to what we have now, and it's kind of a shame, but at the same time, it just shows how far we've come. And the same is true for, like, the Game Gear, which is even more of a battery hog.
Oh, jeez.
Like, the Game Gear screen is just so blurry and so low res. You can see the individual pixels. The colors are all washed out. It just looks like crap. And in motion, it looks even worse. So, like, if you're playing a Sonic game where it's supposed to be fast, the whole screen just goes to a smear. And it's like, you know, this was great back in the day, but now it's kind of, it doesn't look great anymore. And it doesn't look as good as you remember, I would say. And I don't really feel like paying for a $250, $300 mod to put a cell phone screen in it that's nice and clear, but that's what some people do nowadays, so.
That's what makes them happy.
Exactly. And I wouldn't mind owning something like that, but I don't want to spend that much money on it. But, yeah, it's just some of those old consoles, some of those old systems that just don't hold up quite as well as I remember, and it's a shame. The Virtual Boy always kind of sucked, but at the same time, it was a neat novelty at the time, too, so. But now, of course, it's just we realize it was an interesting stepping stone for Nintendo that sort of set them on the path of going to the N64, but ultimately did not deliver what they were hoping for.
So, now you got things like that. One time I saw somebody with an Atari Lynx.
Is that
the handheld?
Yep, the Lynx. It's very similar to the Game Gear in that the screen is just a big colorful smear.
Yeah. what was the Jaguar? That was the home console.
The Atari Jaguar. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that was even good at the time though.
No.
Not really, no.
No.
Unless you like Tempest 2000. Unless you like Tempest 2000. Tempest 2000 is a pretty good game. It's like the only good game on the Jaguar. Or even like the 32X. I have some nostalgia for the 32X, but like the only games I like on it are Virtua Racing and maybe Knuckles Chaotix, even though I don't think Knuckles Chaotix really holds up very well either.
It has some interesting ideas.
I'd say
Door into Summer is a great song.
I would say musically and graphically, Knuckles Chaotix is beautiful, but gameplay wise, it's a bit rough.
Some of those palettes are a bit harsh on the eyes.
The level design is interesting, but ultimately not very. It's interesting at first, and then it kind of gets meh. It's just, you know, not quite as good as you remember, you know? And I don't want to hate Knuckles Chaotix, because they're still fun to be had with it. But
they tried, doggone it.
They did. The sprite scaling was pretty cool. I mean, sure, we had seen that for years on the Super Nintendo, but let's not talk about that.
No.
It did 3D games pretty well. But, I mean, so did the Super Nintendo without an add-on, so.
Well, now that I'm old and depressed, having picked the wrong side of the console wars, should we move on to the Q&A?
You didn't pick the wrong side of the console wars. The Super Nintendo had enough garbage on its own, too. You didn't have to worry about that. We could talk about Super Nintendo garbage all day. People celebrate that system like it's the greatest ever. And it's like, well, maybe, but here's some crap that shows otherwise. Anyway, I am ready to move on to the Q&A, Ian.
All right. You can ask whatever you want on the show. Just hit us up on Twitter at Bumblecast, on email at bumblecast@yahoo.com, in the comment section of any of the YouTube videos. Or if you're a patron, just comment pretty much anywhere on the Patreon site, and we'll find it, and we'll answer it.
Yep.
If you want it answered sooner rather than later, become a patron, and you can get yourself bumped to the head of the line.
Yep. A $5 patron and above, you get early access to your question being answered. And speaking of early access to questions being answered, here's one from good old Scruffy Matt. You know, he's so consistent. He's always got questions, and he's always here. I appreciate that. He says, "Hey, fellas, how's it going? Pretty good. Pretty good. Imagine that Sonic and Mario had a fight, and Mario knew that Sonic already had all the Chaos Emeralds on him. If Mario could take any of his game power-ups in a battle with him, which should he use? Fire Flower, Tanuki Suit, Metal Cap? What do you think would work best in a fight against Super Sonic? Alternatively, if Mario used Cappy, who or what should he capture to use in this fight? No trying to capture Super Sonic. That's cheating."
All right, so I actually put too much death battle logic thinking into this, and we are assuming that we're working off of video game rules.
Okay.
And I'm going to take Mario with his ability to pocket an item, like in Super Mario World and so many others.
Mm-hmm.
So we start the fight with Sonic going super. Let's say he hit the super monitor out of debug mode. So that's 50 seconds of Super Sonic. What Mario could do conceivably is either start off with the cape or the Tanuki suit or something that gives him extra mobility so that he tries to run out the clock. You know, run up the side of the pipes, fly around, just try to get away from Sonic, assuming that Sonic isn't doing the final stage fly around anywhere he wants. We're thinking more like regular stages where he's still bound by gravity. And that he's got a star pocketed just in case Sonic manages to catch up to him, so he can pop the star Invulnerable meets Invulnerable, he's able to last for the end of the fight.
Right.
If he doesn't have any of that, if it's a matter of using Cappy, what he does is he captures Eggman. And the effect of the double mustache bends space-time to the point where he can just stop Sonic from being super by pure will of the mustache alone.
There we go. That sounds perfect. The one thing I thought of was the superstar, invincibility star. This is the only thing I could think of. But I'm like, well, does invincibility cancel out invincibility? Does that, what is the, which one of those is stronger? Are they both equal in strength? Is there a possibility to overcome Supersonic with an invincibility star? And I'm not 100% sure.
You could maybe argue that Mario's Starman invincibility trumps Chaos Emerald Sonic, just going by the idea that Supersonic can still be crushed by objects.
So where can,
I'm pretty sure Invincible Mario can beat Thwomps.
Yes, he can beat Thwomps, but he can be crushed by a stage.
Stage hazard? Okay.
Like if, then, or you can fall down a hole, but I think that's true of both of them.
Right. So in that case, sure, okay, then we'd say they're about equal.
But I'm also thinking, let's think about Mario 2 invincibility star rules, because I just recently played through Mario 2 on Twitch, on Bumblecast Twitch, so I've got it fresh on the mind. There was one point in there where I managed to get a superstar going up to a fight against Birdo, which is a boss level character, and immediately took out Birdo in one hit with a superstar. So would Supersonic be considered a boss level character or something beyond that, like a final boss or something?
Well, it's hard depends on.
It's really hard to say.
You're going to have to cherry pick, because in some stages, Sonic is able to shrug off boss attacks. He just gets knocked back. In other ones, he can actually be damaged by the bosses, which is bull hockey. I hate those bosses.
Yep.
Not canon.
Nope, they suck.
See me after class. Very disappointed.
We're nerds.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't mind. It's funny. But still, we are. Jeez, it's so hard to say. I think your Eggman capture theory is the best one yet, though. I think that's it.
Oh, sure. I've tried to imagine what it would look like, and I kind of blank out and wake up a day later.
Yeah.
So don't think about it too hard. I don't think you can really fully handle that level of mustachitude.
Yeah. Once you start doubling up your mustaches, then things get wild.
So just accept the concept. Don't try to get too deep into it, just for your own sanity.
Right, yeah. All right, let's move on into the standard Q&A. This first one comes from Zerik Studios. Which member of the Coconut Crew was it that Null absorbed in the unreleased Sonic issue that focused on Bunny? Was it Garden?
First off, for those of you who don't know, there was a planned arc in Sonic Universe that was going to focus on each of the Freedom Fighters. And it was fairly into production. Some pencil pages were produced, but obviously they were not published because the book was canceled before we got to that point. And those pages have been scanned, sold. I don't know exactly how they're out there, but they're out there. And one of them was involved a creature called Null, and it took place on Blaze's homeworld. And it attacked the Coconut Crew, which are those koalas from Sonic Rush Adventure. And I don't remember. It was probably Gardon, because if you were going to pick any of the Coconut Crew that have any kind of personality, recognizability, it would probably be Gardon. I mean, he'd be the first one to fight a monster. But it's been so long, I don't honestly remember.
See, when I see the words Coconut Crew, because I wasn't aware of this entirely, and I've not played Sonic Rush Adventure.
It's good.
So I've heard. I like the original Sonic Rush. I just never got around to SRA. But when I see the words Coconut Crew, I'm immediately thinking of Donkey Kong 64. So I'm like, wait a minute.
I kind of hear the rap cue up in my head too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just you.
It's but they're the DK crew, not the Coconut crew. But still, it's kind of like, which of the DK crew got absorbed?
You start thinking about the coconut gun that fires and bursts. If it hits you, it's gonna hurt. No, stop!
No,
out!
No, no!
Out! Damn spot!
Let's move on to Sin Fritz. Good old Sin Fritz. He's another one of our Twitch buddies. He hangs out in there a lot. He also hangs out in the Discord and all sorts of other places. I see this guy around everywhere. He's everywhere. He's crazy. How has working with Sega on the IDW version of the Sonic comic differed from working with them on the Archie version? Are they more than just receptive to ideas?
It's kind of hard to pin down without getting into some of the more nitty-gritty behind-the-scenes stuff, which I can't really get into. I will say that overall, it has been a positive experience. We've got to do some stuff that I would not have anticipated being able to do early on in a brand-new relationship. In fact, a lot of things that are going to be happening, too. I don't know if we could have gotten away in the Archie days with all the good graces, and here it's like, huh, you're letting me do that. Okay, let's have fun with it then. But no, it's been a good experience overall. I've enjoyed it, but you know, it's kind of hard not to enjoy yourself when you're writing Sonic. So,
right.
I'm sorry I can't get into a more in-depth answer, but professional prerogative. It is what it is.
Indeed.
One thing that is different, Sin, that did occur to me, is on the Archie book, I'd say I was more involved with the varying stages of production. Right, I got to see a lot more stuff beforehand and weigh in on it. Whereas IDW is much more fast-paced, and I usually don't see anything until the final proof comic comes through, which is probably what is more standard in the industry. If anybody gets to see it in the end at all, I haven't really compared notes with anybody else. But I guess that would be the biggest difference, is I'm not as hands-on at every stage of production as I was with the old book.
Ah, next question comes from Brad H. What is going on with Cream the Rabbit and Cheese? They've vanished since, and including Sonic Forces, and the comic doesn't seem to address this. Not even Blaze seems concerned by Cream's absence after the events of the war she missed. Then they appeared on the number 9 cover, only to be completely missing from the book and anyone after. I'm confused and concerned. Have they been mandated again? Why is Cream always being given the short end of the stick?
She's not mandated like in the old days. What plans we had for her in season 1 did not bear fruit. She will be showing up in season 2. I promise you that. That she absolutely will. G and Cream and Cheese and other characters. Hashtag no smile.
Okay.
Be careful. I can't really comment as far as short end of the stick. It's, you know, the principal cast is Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Amy. Everyone else is kind of secondary or less. And I'm sorry if to the fans of Cream, but she doesn't quite rank in terms of franchise importance as those central four.
All right. Next question comes from Andrew D. I remember seeing Proto Man's hair changing in the comics. What was the reasoning for this, aside from the fact that the games did the same thing? And is the comic still on hiatus or officially canceled? What are the chances of it coming back? I miss that comic so much. He's talking about the Mega Man comic, by the way, for people unaware.
I don't remember Blues' hair changing too much, unless it's a stylistic change from artist to artist.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Because that pompadour is a funky thing.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't remember. It's been a long time. There wasn't a conscious effort on my end, at least. You know, there was no note saying, draw the hair this way. It was, here's the one piece of reference art we have of dubious canality. Canonicity? Canality?
Well, sure, we'll go with whatever you want.
Yeah, well.
Dubious canon status.
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
There wasn't really a conscious design thing behind it, as far as I know. As far as I know, in terms of hiatus, it is technically still on hiatus. I haven't been told that the book has been canceled, but I haven't done anything for Archie in a few months. So I don't know. It would take Archie wanting to publish it again. It would take Capcom wanting it to be published again. It would take stuff that is well above my pay grade to happen. I imagine fan demand could help grease some wheels if there was a loud enough clamor for the Mega Man book to come back, but I don't know. Really, I'm out of the loop at this point.
I really do miss that book, I gotta say. I really miss the Mega Man book. Oh well. And finally, our last question comes from James M. Speaking of books that may never see the light of day, Ian, will you get on with finishing Lost Hedgehog Tales?
I'd like to thank everyone who has had the patience and understanding to realize that it's out of my hands, that as I have said repeatedly for years, unfortunately, that there are things beyond my control that Lost Hedgehog Tales would make muddier. So for my sake and for the sake of others, it is on indefinite hiatus until those things clear up.
Right. And we just haven't addressed this in a while. That's why I brought this question in here, not to necessarily call out anybody in particular. It's just something we haven't talked about in a little bit. So blame me.
I wish those things would clear up post haste, believe me.
Yep.
But it's beyond my control, which is frustrating for me.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And that would be it. That's all our questions. That's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast, Ian. How do you feel about it? Do you feel good, despite the fact that we just trashed our own nostalgia for half an hour?
It's always good to tear yourself down, as long as you leave room to build yourself up. And you can see how much building I've done over on my website, bumbleking.com, which has my full portfolio, my con schedule, FAQs, my release schedule, all that happy stuff. Or you can find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC. What about you, Kyle?
You can find all the stuff that I've built up over at KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast and many other shows, including Nitro Game Injection, my live show that now streams Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's right. Saturdays have been kind of rough for streaming. Weekend streaming is apparently like completely a no-go in my neck of the woods for some reason, because I guess everybody else is using their cable internet at the same time, and cable internet is stupid, and it's on a shared node, and yeah, whatever. We'll ignore the technology aspect of it, but whatever. It's dumb. But Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, starting actually on the day this comes out. So if you're listening to this on Monday, February 18th, then head on over to Patreon, or and not Patreon, head on over to KNGI.org and get in the chat and join me, and let's talk some video game music and listen to some awesome remixed video game tunes. You can also find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB.
You can follow what's going on with the show at Bumblecast on Twitter and contact us at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
Don't forget, we've also got Patreon-exclusive Bumblecast Gaming live streams on Sundays at or around 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We announce them, and we'll let you know when they're going on. And we also have the Twitch channel at twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming, where usually I will be streaming stuff throughout the week. So keep an eye on at Bumblecast on Twitch, or in the Discord if you're a patron, or like in a variety of other places that I try to reach out to. And all that stuff. So, yeah, check it out.
And if you prefer not to support us on Patreon or on Twitch or through Ko-fi or through PayPal, you can always support us by giving yourself the gift of something emblazoned with the Bumble King logo. Go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble Store and get yourself a shirt or a mug or a hat or, I don't know, leggings, something. There's a lot of stuff on the Bumble Store.
Get you a sticker and slap it on your forehead. And then people will ask, what the heck is a Bumblecast? And you can explain it to them, and then they might join in and listen, or they might be like, man, you're some kind of crazy person. I don't know if I want to even bother with this Bumblecast thing. It's weird. But hey, whatever works out.
there are a bunch of people who do bother with the Bumblecast, and here's a shout-out to Daniel H., Alex F., Alex P., Saturn Flecky, Xanos, Duas, Dizden, Scruffy Matt, Chris A., John B., Samuel P., Jennifer R., David C., Revan the Light, Lisa M., Sam Cybercat, Digama F., Wow, Mike B., Dragon Superfan, AE Double, Brody M., Neil H., Justin S., Justin G., Dan M. S., Adam T., Zilly String, DeCaro, Leech H., K., Chanel, Don B, Sin Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M, James K, Papatripodopoulos, Overthinking Films, Adam BT, and Ron. That's going to wrap us up for the episode. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. See you later. Bye. Don't forget to be critical of your nostalgia and whatever else. Maybe think about things a little bit more before you say that they were great. Or not. I don't care. I'm not your father or your mother. Even though I'm doing a high-pitched falsetto voice like your mother would. Because that's how your mother talks, I'm sure.
Hey. Let's not go calling out anybody's mother.
Oh, darn. Okay, fine.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
Can you say Daniel H. again?
Daniel H. again.
No, just Daniel H. Because it literally no, it said it went Dan L and then the nothing. And then but then the name after it was fine.
Curse you, Discord.
So just say Daniel H.
Daniel H.
There we go. That's good enough. I'll plop that in there.
Or just leave this entire exchange.